This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Ed Feigenbaum is the creator and the editor of the Indiana Gaming Insight and the Indiana Legislative Insight newsletters that are published by the Hanna News Service. And we ask him from time to time to come on Regionally Speaking to bring us updates on the topics that he covers the most. And once again, Ed, thank you for being with us on the program today.
Hey, great to be with you, Chris. Happy New Year to you and everybody in the Lakeshore family.
Well, thank you very much. Let's talk about, if we will, first, there's not a lot of, I guess, good gaming news to come out from this past year. We know that the pandemic messed up everything as far as the casinos were concerned. They had to make some big changes. They've had to make some adjustments to be able to keep the gaming floors open, I understand, basically, and to be able to deal with the pandemic at the same time. What good, if there's anything, that you can say that has come out of how 2020 has reacted to the gaming industry here in Indiana?
Well, they've rolled with the punches, and I think that's a positive. And I think you're going to have to see the same thing come out of the legislature this year. You know, the legislature is going to have to be, you know, just as nimble under the conditions as the gaming industry has been in order to make it through the actual session. And I think that if you look at how we've done over the year in terms of casino revenues, you know, you can't be overly disappointed. I mean, we saw three complete months of closure, March 15th through June 15th, and then we saw a reduction in the capacity of machines, tables, employees, the number of patrons that were allowed into the casinos for the period, you know, since the reopening in June. And given all that, the fact that through the end of November, we were only down by about 23% overall in revenues is probably, you know, better than we might have asked for or anticipated or expected. So if you're looking for a glimmer of hope, that's it. But when I look at everything else, you know, I'm very discouraged. The numbers for November were a lot worse than I think a lot of people had anticipated. When you look at the gaming employment numbers, the number of people that, you know, hold what they call jobs directly in the gaming employment sphere, those continue to decline. And even as the casinos, you know, talk about, oh, well, we're right-sizing and we're adding, you know, some more machines back on the floors and we're trying to get people where they need to be in terms of our employees. Overall, the hiring is not on the upswing, and that's not an encouraging trend.
Does it seem that we've seen, at least towards the end of the year, when it's appeared to be more positive, that the sports books seem to be able to maybe take up some of the slack that the casinos had lost?
Oh, absolutely. You know, the sports books in November here in Indiana had a handle of over $250.4 million, $251.4 million, and you know that's pretty big. But when you compare that to, you know, the handle for the slot machines, for example, you know that's minuscule. The slot machines, you know, tend to generate coin in excess of about $1.2 billion a month. And in the better months recently, you know, post-pandemic, or I should say post-pandemic closures, you know, they've been closer to $1.45 billion, $1.5 billion. So that quarter of $1 billion is not all that much in comparison. The other thing that you have to remember, Chris, is that a lot of that money, about 85% of that, comes from the online and mobile sports books. So those are people who do not even set foot into the casinos, not even necessarily to register for any of these online or mobile sites, the 10 that we've got going in this state. So these are people that are not wagering in the casinos necessarily. And the final thing you need to understand about this is that we tax the sports wagering revenue at a much lower rate than we tax the money that goes through the slot machines and the money that's won on the tables. You know, we're basically looking at an average tax rate of somewhere around 31% to 34% of the slot revenue, slot win, I should say, and the table win of the casinos. But we're only taxing sports wagering adjusted gross revenues at 9.5%. So we're seeing a smaller amount, a smaller universe here with the sports wagering dollars, and we're seeing them taxed at a lower rate than we are the casinos, which, you know, should be generating in a normal year a whole lot more than they're generating now and would be taxed at a higher rate. And the other problem that we've got statewide in terms of the tax revenues from the casinos is that we've imposed a graduated wagering tax on the casinos. So the more money that they bring in and win, the higher their taxes are on a percentage basis. So they're not paying as high a percent in taxes on the lower revenues that they're taking in.
What's the latest that you've received out of Indianapolis from the Indiana Gaming Commission, if they've put anything out here, concerning spectacle entertainment, and in particular, Rod Radcliffe, who's the CEO, the former CEO of Spectacle Entertainment? He's got a number of federal charges against him, and I know he's got a state investigation on him as well, too. Is there anything new, and is there any impact that we've seen on the new Hard Rock Casino that's being built in Gary?
Well, you've got me scheduled for all 5 days next week to talk about this,
yeah,
right?
There's a lot to talk about, I know.
Yeah, just before Christmas, literally just before Christmas, on the Tuesday before Christmas, the 22nd, the Gaming Commission met, and after hearing from a lot of high-priced lawyers, many from Chicago, several from New York, and from other jurisdictions, including Dan Webb from Winston & Strawn in Chicago representing Rod Radcliffe, and that's a name that I know it's familiar to a lot of people in Northwest Indiana as the top U.S. attorney under Jim Thompson back in the day, who closed out many a public corruption case. And he's kind of the go-to criminal defense guy for major white-collar crime issues right now. Dan Webb represented Rod Radcliffe along with several other attorneys, and they were not successful in persuading the commission to change its mind about Mr. Radcliffe. The commission unanimously decided to suspend Mr. Radcliffe's license for a period of 90 days, and they also required that he essentially switch over his trust, his personal trust, which controls a bunch of the Spectacle shares, to an independent trustee that's acceptable to the Gaming Commission. At the same time, the commission made it clear to, I'm sorry, the commissioners made it clear to commission staff that they did not want commission staff spending a lot of time dealing with the transition from the two Majestic Star casinos to the land-based property. Commission staff had already started working with the Hard Rock Casino Northern Indiana people about, you know, the transitioning of slot machines, table games, systems from the Buffington Harbor casinos to the Burr Street property. And the commissioners made it clear that until this was all cleared up, you know, this deal was not necessarily going to be consummated. And they asked the staff to spend all their time or as much time as was needed on continuing the investigation and continuing to ensure that Spectacle was and stays clean. And unless and until this can be shown, the commission said that they want the transfer process essentially halted, if not slowed down considerably. So there is some doubt as to the opening date of the new casino, and the Hard Rock International officials, you know, were at the meeting and explained to the Gaming Commission that they were doing everything that they could to ensure, you know, full compliance by everybody, and assured the commission that, you know, it was not their fault as to anything that Mr. Radcliffe and some of the others that the commission had concerns about had been doing. And it's, you know, it's a situation of a lot of people in a given community that stand to be hurt because of the apparent actions of a few. And that's something that the commission, you know, really tried to get across, that they wanted to make sure that the two currently profitable casinos in Buffington Harbor were able to continue their activities as long as possible rather than potentially move all their equipment and personnel over to a new property, which might not be able to open for whatever given period we might be thinking about going forward.
Now, I know that they are still in the process of looking for new hires and trying to keep the Burr Street operation construction going. So it looks like they're hopeful, at least, that they're going to be able to open the casino at some time this year, I would imagine, maybe later in the year, do you think?
Well, hopeful is the word, mm-hmm. but you know, even though Hard Rock is continuing construction of the casino, you know, the key thing will be the granting of the license and the transfer of the equipment and personnel. And right now, that's being held up at the request of a unanimous Indiana Gaming Commission. Mm-hmm. And Sarah Tate, the executive director of the commission, said twice during the meeting, she said, well, I think there's a whole lot more uncertainty now than when I came into the meeting today, you know, thinking that there might be. And everybody's expressed doubts. You know, it's not one or two commissioners leading the call. It's each of them speaking up and expressing, you know, different concerns about individual items and overall concerns about the project as a result.
Now, in the time we have left here, Ed, let's talk about the General Assembly. They've begun their session on Monday in the special arrangement that they've had to make there in Indianapolis. And I can call the State House complex because it's really the State House proper in the government center south. And I guess to a certain point, I suppose for some of the meetings, they have to go to the government center north to meet, all because of the pandemic. How do things look as we get this session underway? And I know the biggest thing besides the dealing with the coronavirus pandemic is trying to come up with a new two-year state budget out of all of this.
Yeah, things look complicated, convoluted, and are certainly not ideal. And everybody acknowledges this. It's going to be a very difficult process. You know, this will be the most upside-down session that we'll have had since 1989 when we had that 50-50 split in the House and everybody was trying to feel their way through under new rules and everything. There are going to be new rules this time for a lot of things, and the leaders yesterday urged everybody to be patient and to be very flexible about things. And I think you're going to see, you know, some real changes that people will like that will go on beyond any kind of a pandemic situation, but it's still going to be a very difficult process to get things done in some of these, you know, soundproof isolation booths mm-hmm. off stage. You know, it looks surreal when you see the leaders surrounded by these plexiglass things that look like, you know, the presidential inauguration platform. And it's not an ideal situation where you are keeping legislators from, you know, milling around and talking with each other and cutting deals on the floor and finding out information from each other. And it's just going to be very, very difficult. The interesting thing that we learned yesterday was that leaders have decided in the House to initially hold session days only one day per week instead of the usual three per week. That means that you're not going to see a lot of bills pass very early, very quickly. You're going to see a priority placed on essentially three things in the early part of the process. One is the pandemic liability legislation that the governor and businesses have sought. There are some Democrats that have some reservations with it, but I think that they're going to be able to come up with enough of an acceptable or compromise package that you'll see, you know, overall support for that. You're also looking at a bill that will ensure that schools that are educating more than 85% of their students, or, you know, any percentage of their students, held harmless from the virtual education cuts that the legislature imposed a few years ago. The funding is different for certain students that are being put on virtual education programs, and with virtually every district doing virtual education, you know, that's an untenable situation. And they're going to change that law very quickly to make sure that everybody that's in that kind of a situation is treated as if they were an in-class operation with in-classroom students. So those are two bills that are going to go through very quickly. Beyond that, yes, there's the budget. and there's redistricting. And redistricting is going to be problematic because we also just learned yesterday at the national level that the data is going to be delayed yet again. It was supposed to have been in December 31st. Now they're talking about February 9th or even later. Indiana is traditionally the first state in the nation to complete the legislative redistricting process, but it looks like it's going to be difficult to get that done during the regular session this year.
And so it sounds like that not only do we have the longer session because of the work on the two-year state budget, even though we know it's probably going to be not much different than the budget that's just wrapped up here because the revenue picture is so, so tight. But we've got this having to wait till almost literally the last minute of the session just to get the redistricting matter taken care of, too.
Yeah, or perhaps even beyond that. And then that raises questions about, you know, who does the redistricting, because theoretically, if you don't get it done within the legislative session under law, it goes to a commission that does that, a commission that the governor has the deciding vote on. But there may be, you know, a question this year as to whether, you know, they could do that in special session as opposed to doing it through the commission. And then the attorney general may be called in to offer an opinion on that. And the attorney general will be Todd Rokita, who's expressed his reservations in the past with the legislature doing the redistricting. He's called for an independent redistricting commission. So it may be a very interesting situation, you know, given, you know, the relationship in the past between Rokita and Governor Eric Holcomb, you know, who both ran for governor or ran for that gubernatorial nomination in the Indiana Republican State Committee selection process when Mike Pence booted the nomination in favor of going for vice president.
Well, let's just make plans to try to catch up here sometime later this month and see if there's anything more interesting to talk about. But we've got off to a good start, I think, to get the session underway. And thank you, Ed, for spending this time with us today to talk about it.
Well, certainly. I appreciate you having me in. And again, Happy New Year to you and all of your listeners, and appreciate you thinking of me.
You're very welcome. Ed Feigenbaum is the creator and the editor of the Indiana Gaming Insight and the Indiana Legislative Insight newsletters, which come out by the Hanna News Service. And you're listening to Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. You'll see some work underway on a section of the 2700 block of West 35th Avenue in Gary that will soon, at least by the end of the year, the hopes are, to house a 165,000 square foot facility that will better process Northwest Indiana's solid waste. With us to talk more about the project is the CEO of Maya Energy LLC, Jim Ventura. And Jim, thanks for joining us on Regionally Speaking today.
Hi, Chris. Thank you for having me on the show.
Now, tell us a little bit first about what Maya Energy LLC is all about and the process that you all went through to come up with the idea of creating a way to better process solid waste that Northwest Indiana residents and businesses generate.
Okay. Well, thank you, Chris. Real quickly, My Energy is a LLC that we put together in 2015 for the mission of being able to responsibly be able to recycle waste in a manner that was effective and efficient and avoid the waste going to our landfill, which affects the greenhouse gases. With that said, we formed a company. We moved through a process in Gary where we secured 35 acres off Grant Street and 35th Avenue in Gary, Indiana. Mm-hmm. The process took a long time, several years, because we have to go through local zoning notices and so forth, council meetings, public hearings. So it was a very, very complicated, very detailed process that we went through, and we completed it, and I'm glad that we're here today.
I understand that it's the same general area, at least not far away, as to where Lake County Solid Waste Management District's composting site's located out there. They're along 35th and Grant. So it's kind of become an environmentally a processing area, hasn't it?
Exactly. And we look forward to working with the Lake County Solid Waste because I know they do the leaf collection. And we're going to be having, you know, what we call wood waste branches and so forth. So We're looking forward to working with them also.
Now, I understand that Maya Energy LLC is going to use some of the latest state-of-the-art technology to be able to better process this waste that you're bringing in. First off, will you talk a little bit about what the processes will be, as well as how the collection process is going to be able to get the communities to bring this material in?
Sure. First of all, the technology has really come a long way in the last 7 years, recycling process. So we are using a company out of San Francisco, California, called the CP Group. They've been around for a long time. They have actually put in their system in over 400 material recovery facilities worldwide. We visited the plant. We liked the equipment. We liked the company. So we partnered with them to bring in the technology to our facility. The technology they have, we'll use the latest recycling technology to be able to take out the paper, plastic, and cardboard. Municipal solid waste, we will use things like optical sorters that shoots a beam and a light at different types of plastic bottles, and it separates them into 2D, 3D, and so forth. Mm-hmm. We also are looking right now, we're looking very closely into using the latest, which is robotics, to be able to take a wood, to be able to separate it. And these robotic arms pick the waste off a conveyor. They can do probably 4,000 picks a minute. Unbelievable. You know, six times more than a human can do it. So we're looking at that also. And we're also looking at safeguards with the COVID right now, how to be able to have a facility that safeguards the workers, kind of make sure that they don't handle the waste too much, and again, protects them and protects their health.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of staff members, how many people do you hope eventually the facility will be able to have out there as employees to help the city of Gary in particular?
Now, Chris, we're looking at, to start off, we're looking at probably about 55 to 65 full-time employees. We're looking at another 40 ancillary jobs, those are like trucking and so forth. And then total, I would say over the next couple of years, looking at about 125 full-time employees.
Now, I know that some of the initial information that's come out here when Maya Energy LLC was formed talks about the material that you want to collect and you want to be able to process. And that includes both municipal solid waste, which people basically consider trash or garbage, I guess is the old-fashioned term for it, but also construction and demolition debris. For people that are not familiar with what that is, tell us about that and how you're hoping that the facility that you're building out there in Gary is going to be able to handle that and get that off to different uses.
Yes. So, Chris, what we're going to do is we're going to have several lines. We're going to have two dedicated lines strictly for municipal solid waste in the facility, and we're going to have one line dedicated to the separation of the C&D waste, which is construction and demolition debris, which comes from abandoned houses, new housing, construction, any waste that comes out of there. We will take it and we will separate wood, we will separate drywall and so forth, and concrete, and we will recycle it back into the industry.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got very experienced people to do this. Our superintendent has had over 30 years in the waste business. He's ran huge facilities, so we've got a good team to do it, and we've got a lot of interested cities and independent haulers interested in bringing us the waste.
Has the opportunity to be able to locate the facility in Gary been to your all advantage, especially since we know that the city administration wants to deal with the abandoned houses, and there are unfortunately so many of them in the city of Gary, and then there's been some work, I know, to be able to process some of the waste from these abandoned houses, but there's probably a lot more to come in.
Absolutely. I had a conference call with the mayor a couple of weeks ago and his economic development director. They went real well, and we did discuss the C&D problem, the abandoned houses in Gary. And we're looking to sit with the city of Gary in the next couple of weeks to try to work out a solution. And Maya we told him, Mayor, we're here to help work with the city to make it possible to be able to knock these houses, recycle them, and so forth, and work closely with the city of Gary. It was a very positive conversation.
I know that there are other organizations and businesses in Gary that are now dealing with handling solid waste. Carmu's Lime up there off Lake Michigan is also using their own processes that they've set up to be able to bring solid waste in, municipal solid waste in particular, and turn that into processes. What are you hoping that My Energy LLC can do that might be a little different?
Well, first of all, I know Camus. I've been to the facility there. What they basically do, they take a lot of the hazardous oils and sludges, okay, where we deal with strictly municipal solid waste, mm-hmm. construction, demolition, debris. We're different than what they do, and they process it right there in Camus, because Camus, they own 50% of Vexor, who does all the processing for them. So we're different. We have a different market. And right now, like I said, Chris, we've got such an overwhelming support from haulers. We're strategically located in the right position. Over 10 to 12,000 tons of municipal solid waste go right through the area into the landfill in Union County.
What kind of support? You mentioned about City Hall and what the city administration wants to do to be able to see you folks get started here. What other support have you gotten, perhaps from the area construction and the unions that are going to help out in getting the facility built?
Well, it's been very positive. I mean the people in the waste industry. We've met with them, and you know we were going to do a groundbreaking back in December, but the COVID issue stopped us, and. When we sent out the flyers, we had overwhelming response. People were going to come to the dinner, but unfortunately, like I said, we had to cancel it because of COVID. But we're moving forward. We've got a complete support of waste. We've got letters of intent already. We've got contracts already signed. So we've got overwhelming support.
What kind of opportunities have you had since the first word of putting the process in place to be able to get the facility built and all? What kind of support have you gotten in talking with neighbors, so to speak, there along 35th Avenue and others that live in that side of Gary as to what you're planning to do and how to deal with their concerns?
Well, you know, when we went through the process, that was all addressed through the state permitting. And we had all the public hearings. You know, they were all over the newspaper. Some of the things that were said were not true. Some of the stuff that, you know, that were reported wasn't accurate. But I never took the position of trying to you know, say things or I don't want to be adversarial. My energy is here to work with the mayor, the city of Gary, Lake County, because this is definitely going to create an impact, a positive impact. The plant is going to be a state-of-the-art, beautiful facility. We have indoor tippers, the only ones in the country, indoor, complete and closed. So we've done everything. We've gone through the process. It's been very detailed. We've had, you know, neighbors give their comments to the state. They reviewed everything we were doing closely. They were really, really honest about, you know, being very, very careful how we built this facility, make sure we take everything into account, and we did that, and again, everything worked out good. We got our permits, and we're happy.
Now, Jim, if you will, bring us up to date with how the project is coming along. What stages are you in right now, and what folks that come by the neighborhood there on West 35th Avenue are likely to see go up here in the months ahead, and when also do you hope to have the facility open for business, so to speak, for processing the solid waste?
Yes. What we're doing right now is, Chris, we're right now working with the city of Gary. They have an engineering company they work with called Robertson Engineering. We're working closely with our engineers with Robertson Engineering. We're doing soil borings on 35th Avenue. We just got it done yesterday. We've done soil borings on the land itself, the 35 acres. We're waiting for the results. Once we get those results, we're going to submit to a site plan review committee through zoning and planning in the fire department, and we're going to go over to the whole construction that we're going to do out there. And we're looking to get our first permit, actually, so we can put in a culvert, and we're going to put in the entrance to the facility that will allow us now to start bringing in trucks, crush rock, dirt, and start elevating the property. That will happen within the next, I would say, 30 to 60 days. We're going to be staking out the property pretty soon. They will see stakes out there. We're working on the foundation designs, get them approved by the city. And I would say by March, toward the end of March, maybe April, you're going to start seeing the foundation of the building go up. Mm-hmm. And we'll hopefully be open by the end of the year.
Is that a property out there, or land out there, I should say, that was it maybe at one time was zoned for agricultural purposes and then got changed over into industrial and commercial purposes? And so it never really was set up to be more than just farmland out there. That's why you have to go through the process of being able to put more roads and the like in to get in off 35th Avenue, that be ready for the truck traffic that'll have to come out there.
Yeah, definitely. So that's why what we did was a traffic study before we started the project. And what we're basically doing with the city, when we get together with them, we're going to talk about 35th. We've got money in the budget. Obviously, we're trying to get some funds from the state, hopefully a matching fund to be able to improve 35th Avenue, obviously, for our facility being open.
Now, you mentioned that you're aiming toward the end of 2021. Are you looking forward to having a facility out there and ready to go to be able to better process what people are throwing away, what businesses are throwing away these days?
Yes, we're looking. We're definitely working hard to try to get there by the end of the year to be fully open and operational of 2021.
Jim Ventura is the CEO of Maya Energy LLC. They are in the process of getting ready to build a 165,000 square foot solid waste processing facility on the west edge of Gary at West 35th Avenue near Grant Street, and the plan to be in open for business or later this year is the plan right now. And Mr. Ventura, thank you for being with us today to talk about the project.
Chris, thank you for having me. Anytime, call me.
And that's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Thank you very much for being with us. We'll be back with you tomorrow.